Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this edition of RealityCast, I'll be interviewing Jill from Feminist on looking forward after the election. Also, the Personhood Amendment folks branch out, the panic over the hookup culture continues, and someone famous admits that he's really, really hostile to science. I have to share a small part of Keith Olbermann's moving special comment on the passage of Prop 8, a passage that eliminated already existing same-sex marriages in California. Warning, grab a tissue, his voice is shaking, he's so upset.
And uncountable in our history are the number of men and women forced by society into marrying the opposite sex in sham marriages or marriages of convenience or just marriages of not knowing. Centuries of men and women who have lived their lives in shame and unhappiness and who have, through a lie to themselves or others, broken countless other lives of spouses and children, all because we said a man could not marry another man or a woman could not marry another woman. The sanctity of marriage. How many marriages like that have there been? And how on earth do they increase the sanctity of marriage rather than render that term meaningless? What is this to you? Nobody is asking you to embrace their expression of love. But don't you as human beings have to embrace that love?
It gets even more moving when he gets to the part about how love is one of the few things we have to shield us from a brutal world. Seriously, I had to grab a box of Kleenex. Anti-choice nuts have a lot in common with a bad stench, and it's not just the stink, it's the persistence, and the uselessness, and the annoyance factor. The Colorado Right to Life people are a great example. They put forth this personhood amendment in Colorado, and it gets beat in the polls 3-1. Normal people's response is to pack up and go home, but if you're a bad stench, you continue to linger, and perhaps get even stinkier. That appears to be their choice. They not only aren't going home, but starting a new organization to get this stupid ballot initiative on ballots across the country. They've already put out a video, which inclines me to think they knew that they wouldn't win and that they don't care.
In 2008, the people of Colorado took part in an unprecedented grassroots effort.
The people.
The people.
The people took back the power of unelected judges and corrupt political parties.
Actually, the people voted down a personhood amendment 3-1, and so-called corrupt judges had nothing to do with it. The people rejected attempts to ban abortion, and the people upheld the right to use contraception without perverted Bible thumpers getting into their business. The people want to be left alone. But this isn't about actually accomplishing anything of substance. Bob Einyart of Colorado Right to Life admitted as much, saying, quote, "Our goal is to increase the social tension over abortion," end quote. This is about deliberately sowing discontent, resentment, and anger for its own sake. But back to the video, because it's a doozy.
What is a person?
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all human beings are persons with the God-given rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Actually, it's clear that they don't believe that. The only way they could believe that is if they believe that fertilized eggs are human beings, and perhaps that sperm are human beings, but not that living, breathing women are human beings. Because having the right to avoid pregnancy and terminate unintended pregnancy is a part of a woman's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I also want to quarrel with the rewriting of the Declaration of Independence, which says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal," etc. Now, obviously, they excluded women from the original document, but the course of U.S. history has meant that our laws and courts have expanded this to include women. What's interesting about their rewriting is they specifically exclude the language about equality that was written into the Declaration. And, of course, they would. Because at the end of the day, this is about making women unequal, less than, subordinate, and subject to having their bodies owned by the religious right through state enforcement. A woman has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These phrases are meaningless with regard to cellular life. A fertilized egg is alive, but it doesn't have a life in the sense that is meant in this phrase. A life is understood as this thing that people with brains and bodies who live in the world have. And certainly, liberty is a meaningless phrase for an egg. Liberate it from the womb and it becomes dust pretty much immediately. Pursuit of happiness? Yeah, now we're getting silly. And now for the blatant lying.
We won't rest until every state recognizes that preborn babies are persons just like you and me.
And me.
And me.
And us.
The thing is that they aren't really describing this law accurately. They're trying to say that women have persons with legal rights floating around there after conception. This has nothing to do with babies, which are created after pregnancy. Conception actually happens before pregnancy, which means they're trying to create a legal structure that would give rights to beings we can't even prove exist that may or may not be floating around inside your innards right now. Taken to its logical conclusion, these laws would mean that fertile women could be ineligible not just for hormonal contraception, but for any medical care beyond pulling a splinter, because you don't have to be pregnant to have a fertilized egg inside you. Which is why it's repulsive to have women in the video saying, like me. Because no, it's not like you. This is about those women having their status as persons downgraded, and redefining women not as persons, but receptacles for people that may or may not exist. The graphics in this video are also lies. They show pictures of 9-month-old fetuses, which already have government protection. They're trying to extend that protection to single-celled and hypothetical life. I'd like to welcome Jill Filipovich to the program. Jill is a blogger at Feminist and has been widely published as a feminist writer. She also has a JD from NYU. She's here today as a part of our On and Off Meet the Blogger series to talk about the recent election and reproductive justice issues going forward from here. Welcome to RealityCast, Jill.
Thanks, Amanda.
So you've been closely following the transition team after the Obama win in last week and reporting on their various moves. What are you happy with so far, and what do you want them to prioritize with regards to women's rights in 2009?
I'm happy, first of all, to hear that Obama plans to repeal the global gag rule. I think that's an incredibly important step. Not only for women's rights, but for international human rights and for foreign diplomacy in general. So I'm glad that he's made a commitment to that. You know, I also think picking Rahm Emanuel was an interesting choice. I think it's good that the Obama team is picking people who are going to challenge them and, you know, who really have reputations as people with strong opinions, people who are intelligent, and not just yes men, which is what I think was one of the biggest problems with the Bush administration, is, you know, they really only picked people that echoed their message. I think the Obama camp has already made a commitment to having a really wide variety of thinkers and leaders on their team, and that's great.
And what do you want to see with them going forward from here with regards to women's rights?
Well, I mean, the Supreme Court is obviously one of the most important areas for women's rights, and just generally to improve a lot of the legal messes that the Bush administration has made. So, you know, as some of the current Supreme Court justices step down, I'd really like to see Obama pick people that are progressive, are, you know, committed to upholding Roe, and are generally committed to upholding civil liberties and progressive legal principles in general. So I think that's a really important one. I also think focusing on international women's health and, you know, making sure that U.S. money is going to programs domestically and abroad that actually help women, that actually provide healthcare services, and that aren't simply, you know, ideological anti-choice groups like what the Bush administration has funded. I think those are really the two big areas that need to be focused on.
So how are you feeling on healthcare reform? What do you think the odds are of that happening anytime soon?
You know, I think if he does it, you know, pretty early in his term, if he attempts to do it at least, it'll go over well. I mean, there's a lot of support among the American people for it. We now have, you know, Democratic Congress. I think that the time to do it is now, and that the worst mistake he could make would be to sort of hedge his bets on it and, you know, and wait until it becomes a real emergency. I think that he needs to take on health care right away. And I think he can do it. I think he's got a lot of momentum behind him. And, you know, making this policy area, you know, his big accomplishment, I think it really cement him, you know, in history as one of our great leaders.
On this show, I've been somewhat obsessively covering the massive losses for anti-choice forces on ballot initiatives throughout the country. So what's your take on this? Is it just a blip, or is it a sign of a greater pro-choice trend?
I think it's both a sign of a greater pro-choice trend, and I think it's a sign of exhaustion with abortion as a wedge issue. You know, I think in people's day-to-day lives, abortion just isn't something that really matters that much, which isn't to say that it doesn't matter politically, that it doesn't matter when it does, because, you know, it's one of those issues that when it matters a lot. But, you know, for most days of the week, for most people, it's not really on their radar screens. And so I think people are sort of tired of having that divisiveness in our political process, you know, and are tired of seeing it gets so much attention from anti-choice forces who are so focused on abortion but aren't actually focused at all on providing health care or any sort of other, you know, life-affirming help to people. So I think that was really representative of people saying, like, we're tired of this. I mean, Proposition 4 in California, the third or fourth time Californians have voted on that?
The third.
I think people are really, really sick of it. South Dakota just, you know, completely knocked down this abortion ban by the same margins that they knocked it down a year ago or 2 years ago, whenever it was last voted on. I think it's reflective both of being more pro-choice and, you know, of just kind of wanting to let this one go and just, you know, let people live their private lives.
Which leads me to my next question, which is, basically, I think reproductive rights activists have felt on the defensive for many years, like we were somehow on the losing side of a lot of these issues. But this most recent election, I think, has completely reversed course on that. And we're finally not only feeling accepted, but like we have the steering wheel again. So, you know, and it's not just abortion. It's also, you know, abstinence only is getting rejected and all this polling data, et cetera. So what do you think we should do to capitalize on the momentum?
Well, I mean, I think now is the time to really put forth the message that the reproductive rights movement, it's an umbrella movement. It's not just about abortion. It's about birth control access. It's about sexual health education. It's about the resources to have children and raise them. And so I think pushing for, you know, a wide variety of things, you know, help to women with dependent children, greater, you know, children's health care coverage, greater health care coverage in general, birth control access, comprehensive sex ed, you know, a repeal to welfare reform, or at least something that makes welfare reform and the current welfare system a little more manageable for low-income women and low-income families. And sort of putting forth the idea that these are, you know, women's rights and reproductive rights issues, and really capitalizing on the fact that since we're no longer on the defensive about abortion constantly, we can now kind of start to talk about these other issues that we've always cared about but that have, you know, long taken a back seat because abortion had to be in the front row.
Do you have specific policy ideas that you'd like to see reproductive rights activists focus more of our attention on?
I think focusing on help to pregnant women and help to low-income women that want to have children has been something that, unfortunately, we haven't been the best on, and that I think you've seen a lot of anti-choice groups then capitalize on. And so I think focusing on that would be really, really important. So pushing for daycare options for low-income women, pushing for universal health care, that, I think, really needs to be on the radar screen right now. You know, also focusing on, you know, state-by-state initiatives to make sure that birth control is covered by insurance companies. Pointing out the fact that no so-called pro-life group supports contraception access, and creating programs that are actually going to decrease the need for abortion, like contraception access, like comprehensive sex ed, repealing abstinence-only education, I think, is a really big one.
Okay, so this is hairy because it's one of those, like, scary speculation questions. But obviously, for all the loss of Prop 8, or, well, actually, it wasn't a loss. It passed, which means that gay marriage is now eliminated from California. Obviously is throwing a huge wrench into the whole gay marriage movement. So where do you see all this heading? What do you think it is going to be the kind of showdown on gay marriage? Because it's obviously not going anywhere as an issue.
Well, you know, Prop 8 was obviously a huge disappointment to a lot of us. To anyone who values social justice, I mean, that was like a punch in the gut. That said, the issue is not over. You know, I don't think that gay rights activists need to pack up their things and go home, you know, or even approach them from a different angle. The fact is the votes on Prop 8 were so close, and they were much, much closer than when similar referendums have been tried out in the past and similar ballot initiatives, even in California. And so I think, you know, the gay rights movement has changed minds incredibly quickly in this country. I mean, 10 years ago, the fact that, you know, marriage would be on the ballot in California and would almost win, or gay rights activists would almost win, you know, was not really in the realm of possibility. So I think, you know, we've made incredible strides on that end, even though this election was particularly disappointing. You know, I do think that it was also a watermark for how far we've come. And what you're seeing, I mean, I don't know if you read this today, but some activists in Utah are now pushing for not marriage rights, but, you know, basic domestic partnership rights for same-sex couples in Utah. And the way that they're doing it is they're using the Mormon Church's own words, you know, which during the California debates were, you know, that we don't hate gay people, that we support their rights to have, you know, the same domestic partnership rights that everyone else has, that we just don't want to put the word marriage on it. They're using those same claims against them now in Utah to try and get these rights. And it's not perfect, and it's not ideal, but it's something. And, you know, the fact that this issue is being pushed in Utah, that the Mormon Church, in order to save face, has to get up there and say, we don't hate gay people, we don't want to oppress them, you know, that they have to mince words in a particular way, I think really shows how far we've come. And, you know, how it's going to be a challenge, but I don't think it's impossible to go even further and to really, you know, truly secure civil rights and civil liberties for all people.
Well, thank you very much. And you can read Jill and many other feminist bloggers at feminist.us/blog. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Jill.
Yeah, thanks, Amanda. It was fun.
Now listen up.
This should be fun. I checked out the Independent Women's Forum blog to see what they've been up to lately, and as usual, there's a great deal of hand-wringing over the lack of hymenal toughness amongst today's college-age women. Their resident expert on slutty college girls is Allison Kasich, whose credentials seem to be that she went to college, though she is most assuredly not a slut, which is why I don't understand why she's supposed to understand it so well. Anyway, she was trotting out this expertise on sluttiness on the Steve Largent show.
Basically, you know, a hookup is this sort of vague word that has, you know, popped up, particularly with young people, to sort of describe, it's sort of one of those catch-all phrases that is intentionally vague so that you can say, oh, I hooked up with Jeff last night, and no one really knows what that means. Did you just kiss? Did you have sex? It's sort of intentionally vague so that you can sort of protect your reputation.
It's not wrong to say that it's an intentionally vague phrase, but this pearl-clutching about how this is some new thing that kids just came up with is a joke. I'm 31, and my single friends still talk about hooking up. And you know what? What I've observed is that they're not trying to protect their reputation or hide stuff from nosy people like Allison. Mostly it's an acknowledgement that sex or sexual contact isn't just penis and vagina intercourse. It can be anything from making out to oral sex to party all night craziness. It's just a more nuanced, realistic understanding of sex.
I mean, basically the sort of the simplified version of a hookup is, a physical encounter, and it really can range from just kissing all the way to having sex, but with no hope of really sort of anything beyond that, no hope of a relationship. So in the past, you know, sort of in the traditional dating model, you know, you might date for a while and hope to hook up.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's sort of flipped. You'll hook up first, and someday, maybe, if you're lucky, you might date that person.
This sort of thing makes me sad to cover Allison Kasich. Even though she's working for an anti-feminist organization and is a professional slut-shamer, the whole idea that you just hope for a relationship, any relationship, is sad. But what's really depressing is how much Allison promotes the idea that this kind of desperation is normal. The whole problem with IWF is that they buy 100% into the idea that emotional health for women can be measured by how lucky they are to have a guy, any guy, condescend to date them. They don't discuss the fact that it's not always roses to have a boyfriend, and especially not if you're desperate.
Back to this situation, what it's like on campus, and then what it's like after campus, because then the good news is you actually see if you look at her study, there's a return to dating sort of in those post-college years when people hit, you know, about 24, 25, and they've sort of settled down, and they're ready to start looking for, you know, their husband or their wife. Then you see this sort of shift back to dating, but in that sort of, you know, high school to through college years, you don't see them engaging in that behavior.
She's talking about a study done on the hookup culture that tries to be unbiased. But it's clear that Allison has a strong bias, because she classifies marriage-minded dating as good and hooking up and avoiding commitment as bad. But it's clear to me that younger people avoid commitment precisely because they are too young to get married. And it's good to me that they realize that. Now, if kids want to have more solid relationships and that's not happening, there's a problem there. But honestly, I blame the myth of romance that dominates our culture and Allison's own writing. We have this idea that falling in love should be forever. And so obviously kids who aren't ready for marriage don't want to fall in love yet. I'll leave you with this bit of sexism.
This would seem to be a great thing for guys and not such a good thing for women. I would think that typically women are the ones that want a relationship. Guys are the ones that want the hookup and move on.
I don't know why conservatives are so anti-male. The notion that men can't feel love or want to have a girlfriend is so rude. I mean, it's rude to paint women as nature's clingy needballs who are desperate for love from anyone. But it's almost worse to paint men as unfeeling buffoons incapable of love who need to be tricked into relationships by women who use sex as bait. And now for the wisdom of Wingnuts. This one might be rightfully called Mission Drift, but it's such an awesome example of the hostility to science that pervades the right that I think I should play it. Lawrence O'Donnell asked Pat Buchanan on MSNBC what he thinks about the scientific theory that's as sound as the theory of gravity.
You know I hate to end this.
Evolution, Pat? Huh? Do you believe in evolution, Pat?
Do I believe in evolution? I believe God created heaven and earth. Do you believe you're descended from a monkey? I would understand it.
I fail to see much difference between pleading with someone, "What if you were aborted?" and saying to them, "Do you think you came from monkeys?" And honestly, if Pat Buchanan is going to be on TV all the time, he needs to be asked more questions like this so people know what kind of wingnut they're dealing with.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.